Good afternoon, everyone. When I was young, my dad used to do something that was always very intriguing and interesting to me. It may not sound like it would be something, but to a boy, a lot of things pique our curiosity and our interest. He had one of these straight-edge razors, and I always used to love to go in and watch him lather his face. You know, he had a little brush, and he dipped it in this little cup that had soap in it, lathered, and then spread it all over. And then he took this long, straight-edge razor and started to shave. And I always thought, how can he do that without cutting himself? Because I'd seen him sharpen the razor. He had a razor strap that was about 3 inches wide, about 2 feet long, and about a quarter of an inch thick, and it was made of leather. And he would take that straight edge and go back and forth and back and forth, and that thing was shiny over the years from having been sharpened. But it was just amazing what he could do, and it kind of reminds me of the westerns that you'll see from time to time where someone goes into a barbershop to get shaved, and maybe it's a bad man, or maybe he's a lawman, a good man. And depending upon who's doing the shaving, whether he's good or bad, you're always kind of wondering, well, is he going to make and complete the shave, or will he allow his hand to slip and, you know, cut the man's throat? That's never happened, but they always presented in that way. In any event, as I got a little older, I thought for a Father's Day present, you know, that looked like it was a lot of work, having to shave like he was doing and sharpen his razor all the time. I thought I'd buy him an electric razor for a Father's Day present. So I spent, I don't know how long it took me to save $32 or $33. I mean, that was an enormous amount for me at that time. And just for the fun of it, I went in and looked at the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, to see the value of a dollar at that point and what it would be today. And the same razor would have been, you know, like $270, $280 based on, you know, inflation. In any event, I was really excited when I bought him that present. So I gave it to him and he opened it up. He looked at it and he said, "John, I want you to take this back." Didn't even try it. And, you know, I wondered, you know, what's wrong with it? It was very expensive. Don't you even want to try it? He said, no. He said, I know enough about them that I know that razor is not going to give me a clean shave. So I took the razor, took it back. I don't know if I even substituted anything for him that year. But anyway, he never really wanted anything. I mean, very easy to please in that respect. Mom, on the other hand, I could give her flowers for Mother's Day, or a nice card, or if I was really flush, maybe a box of candy or chocolates or something like that. She never ever asked me to take something back. Regardless of what it was I gave her, she was always very appreciative. She was very thankful. She never complained that I had given her something that she didn't want. And I think, and I'm quite sure, that with her it was the thought of what had been done as much as what was actually given. Well, tomorrow we all recognize our mothers. And when I use the word mothers, I'm also using that in a generic sense. I'm including grandmothers, great-grandmothers, daughters who are mothers, granddaughters who are mothers, sisters who are mothers. So just for the sake of that, understand when I say mothers, it means anyone in your family that falls into that category. Tomorrow is set aside, one day set aside, for us to acknowledge the mothers and what they've done. The fifth commandment instructs us to honor our parents. We know that very well. We honor our mother, we honor our father, and it says that if we do this, we'll have longevity. We'll be granted a long life. So there's a specific blessing in honoring our parents in that regard. There may be some few who will say, well, I don't know. I don't think my mother's worthy of honor. And they may have been raised in an abusive environment where the mother was either abusive emotionally, physically, and so the concept of a loving mother may be very, very foreign to them, and they may be struggle with being able to, in good conscience, honor their mother, and it can be fathers as well. Even given that type of an environment or that type of a background, it doesn't mean that we should judge our mothers or we should forget about them or that we should ignore them. We're told to honor them. Unless, of course, I'm going to qualify that, if by doing that, if by putting yourself in a position where you were close to them and you hadn't been close for a number of years, you'd either jeopardize yourself maybe physically or more so emotionally, that it would actually be harmful to you in that regard. But absent that, you should never stop loving your mother. I'm going to look at an example today in the Old Testament of a woman who was very, very strong. As the example of a woman who was faced with a very, very difficult decision, and what she did to protect her family. And this is what mothers do. Mothers protect their family. They do the best they can do to give protection to their family. We're going to pretty much just stay in one chapter. So if you would like to turn over to 1 Samuel 25. 1 Samuel 25, I'm going to look at the example of Abigail and some of the things that she did and some of the things that she accomplished in order to protect her family. 1 Samuel 25, beginning in verse 2. There was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel, and they were two rather small cities about 2 or 3 miles apart. And the man was very great. He had 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. And of course, in the Old Testament, as you're well aware, you're wealth was measured in your livestock. So he was very wealthy. Now the name of the man was Nabal, verse 3, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of, notice the characteristic that is listed here to begin with. The first thing that she was singled out as possessing, she was a woman of good understanding. She was wise. A woman of good understanding. And also of a beautiful countenance. Maybe you wouldn't find her on the cover page of People, but I'm certain that she'd probably be somewhere inside. She had beauty, and of course, we'll see what happened about that later on. She's a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. But the man, her husband, was churlish and evil in his doing, very self-centered. And you wonder when you hear the characteristics of both how this happened. Was this a case of opposites attracting each other? Is it like the beautiful high school cheerleader who's attracted to the rebel, the guy that has the hot rods, the guy that's always skipping school, the guy that's doing drugs, and for some reason there's an attraction to that rebellious spirit, and perhaps a attraction based on the fact that, oh, I can change him. I don't know. It doesn't say. Maybe this was a arranged marriage. I'm not sure what their ages were. Maybe she was quite young and he was much older. But regardless of what precipitated the marriage and brought them together, it doesn't say. Anyway, in verse 4, David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. So David and his band of men had been out in the wilderness in and around the Carmel area. And when he heard that Nabal was in that area, he had 10 of his young men, verse 5, and asked them to go to Nabal, go to Carmel, and say unto him, and to greet him in my name. Tell him that I'm sending this greeting. And thus shall you say to him that liveth in prosperity. He knew that Nabal was very, very wealthy. You live in prosperity. Peace be both to you and your house and all that you own. It was a blessing. David had, at this point in time, had been anointed king, but he hadn't taken the office as yet. And verse 7, and now I have heard that thou hast shearers. Now thy shepherds which were with us, we hurt them not. So David's men had associated with the shepherds. They were around them. His men knew the shepherds, knew what they were like. You can ask the young men, but he said in verse 7, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them, all the while they were in Carmel. So while they were there and while David's men were around, they didn't worry about anything because those men were acting as a shield, as a barrier, as a method of protection, the young men and their herd. Verse 8, and he said, and you know, if you want to corroborate this, if you want to verify this, just ask your young men and they will show you. They'll tell you. They saw us. They know what we did. Wherefore, and because of that, because we offered that protection, yet let my young men find favor in your eyes. For you come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thy hand unto thy servant and to thy son David. So in recognition of what we've done for you as a favor, we looked out for you. We tried to be available to make sure that nothing harmed. There was no reason for us to do any of this. I mean, it's just that we were there, and out of the goodness of our heart, we protected you. Ask thy young men, and they will show you. They'll tell you. Wherefore, let my young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thy hand unto thy servant and to thy son David. And when David's young men came, they told Nabal all of this according to the words, and mentioned they were doing it in David's name. And then they ceased. They didn't say anything else. They just shut up. They waited for the response. Verse 10. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, well, who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? You know, nowadays there be many servants that break away, every man from his master. They're slaves who decide they're going to go out on their own. If they can get away, they'll find a way to take care of themselves. So Nabal was saying, well, you know, how do I know that you're not just renegades? That you're, you know, you've broken away from your master. Verse 11. Shall I then take my bread, the bread that we've baked, the water from our well or our cistern or wherever they got it, and my meat that I've killed? You know, the barbecued meat, the barbecued lamb, the barbecued goat that we have prepared for my sharers. And you expect me to authorize my men to hand all of this over to you? So his young men came back and told him, well, you know, Nabal doesn't recognize anything about you. And he says, I don't know where this guy came from and who he is. So he didn't give us anything. Now, David was a little bit of a hothead in some respects. And I suppose, based on the story and based on what had transpired, we probably might have the same feeling. And that being that here, I've spent all this time, or we spent all this time, watching out for your herds, watching out for your shepherds, watching out for your people, and just, you know, asking for a small token. And you've refused. So David told his men, verse 13, put on your swords, and David did as well. And 400 men followed him, and 200 abode by the stuff. It's an interesting description, 400 or 200 by the stuff. I suppose those were things they used to take care of their animals. So anyway, David led 400 men, and like I say, he was hot under the collar. Verse 14. But one of the young men, one of Nabal's young men, told Abigail, Nabal's wife, what had transpired. She listened, and she got the entire story. She didn't hear part of it. She waited, she was patient, and listened to how the whole thing had played out. They told her, saying, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed." He vehemently denounced David and sent the young men away. So he just turned his back on their request in spite of everything that those people did for the shepherds and for him as a person, because he was benefiting from having more sheep in his flock, having more goats in his herd. And they mentioned to her in verse 15, they verified that, said the men were very good to us. We weren't hurt as long as they were around. Neither missed we anything as long as we were conversant with them. When we were in the fields together, nothing was stolen. There were no marauders. Verse 16, they were a wall unto us both by night. At night we didn't worry about wolves coming around or predators that were out at that time of the night, because there were so many of them there, and they had guards on watch against things like that. So we didn't have to worry. And day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep, during the day, if there were any poachers or rustlers around, they didn't dare take on David and his men. There were so many of them. Verse 17, after explaining to Abigail what the men had done and how they had protected Nabal's flocks and his herds, "Now, therefore, know and consider what thou wilt do. You better do something to intervene, because if you don't, evil is determined against our master and all his house, all his household. For he's such a son of Belial that a man that cannot speak to him." Nabal obviously didn't have any common sense at all, was bullheaded, arrogant, and, you know, if he decided he was going to do something, that was it. He didn't listen to reason. Verse 18. After hearing this story, it says, then Abigail made haste. She didn't consult with anyone. She didn't get a group of people together and discuss this matter and try to decide a course of action. She didn't worry about that. It says she made haste. She took immediate action to protect her family, which included her no good husband. So she took 200 loaves, 2 bottles of wine, 5 sheep that were already dressed. They'd been barbecued. They were all ready to eat. Five measures of parched corn, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on donkeys. So she was going out to intervene. She was going to try to get out there before David reached their home and send this as a peace offering to try to placate him. In verse 19, she said unto her servants, "Go on before me. Don't wait for me. Let's try to let him know that we're coming in good faith to give him something." I don't know how this would all work among 600 men, the things I've described, but I'm assuming it would more than take care of them, and probably there would be something left over. And she said, "If you go out before him and give him more than he asks, maybe he won't be as apt to be interesting or interested in killing us. And behold, I come after you. But she told not her husband Nabal. She didn't tell him. He was probably so drunk, he probably wouldn't have remembered anyway. Or if she'd approached him in the wrong way, he might have made a terrible blunder. And so she decided, well, we'll take care of this. If he doesn't attack, then we've done our job. If he attacks, it wouldn't have made any difference anyway. But I'll wait until after the danger's passed and then tell him about what has transpired. Verse 20. And it was so, as she rode, that she came down by the covert of the hill. There's a part of a hill where you can't see up and over. And so that's where she was. And behold, David and his men came down against her. So they came over the crest of the hill, and they met. And she met them. Verse 21. Now David said, surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow owns in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him. I've taken care of him. I've protected him. I've protected his herds. I've protected his shepherds. And what did he do? What was his response to me? How did he repay me? He hath requited me evil for good. So everything that I did for him didn't make any difference. He's intent on doing me evil. Verse 22. So, and more also, do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave anything of his by tomorrow morning. It was like Sherman's March to the Sea that you've heard of in the history of the Civil War. They just laid waste to everything. There wasn't anything living in a certain stretch. And that's what Nabal intended to do. Or not Nabal, but David intended to do to Nabal. Verse 23, and when Abigail saw David, she hasted and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground. You know, she wasn't dumb. She read the Carmel Gazette and talked to the women by the river as they were washing their clothes and exchanging gossip of what was going on around the country. She knew who David was, and she also knew how God had blessed him, and that he was destined to do great things. So, you know, her reaction was just instinctive. You don't want to alienate someone like this. You don't want to be on their bad side. Verse 24, and so she fell at his feet and said, upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be. In other words, she took the rap for Nabal. The implication being she should have been more in tune with what was going on and tried to talk to the young men and not even have Nabal in the loop at all. She should have been sensitive to that. That was the implication going on. And she said, and let thy handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thy audience and hear my words. She wasn't at all timid. She wasn't at all shy. She had something she wanted to say. She threw herself at his mercy and asked if she could just be heard. That was all she asked. Verse 25, let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, because folly is with him. That is what he's like. You know, you didn't hit him on a particularly wrong day. If you'd even talk to him on a good day, or your young man had, he would have still had the same response, because this is the way he is. You know, if I'd had a chance to talk to your young men before they talked to Nabal, none of this would have occurred. But since I didn't, now we're dealing with the consequences. Now therefore, verse 26, my Lord, as the Eternal liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood, because Abigail went out and confronted him. Not confronted is not perhaps the right word, but at least put a stumbling block. He had to deal with her because she threw herself in front of him. He couldn't, well, just run over her. But he had to listen to her. But she said, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood, God has placed me in this position at this time in your life to make sure that you don't commit a big mistake that you're going to be sorry for later. Now, she is just being very, very diplomatic, and God is using her to protect her family. Now, let your enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal. Verse 27, and now this blessing, this very large supply of food that we've brought out for you and your men, and of course this goes back to what all men know, and that's that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? Exactly. So look at this, look at that barbecued meat. Don't you want to, you know, instead of proceeding on and doing something rash, don't you want to, you know, at least try it? I know you, your men look hungry. I know you've been out here a long time. So why don't you just think about what you're planning to do and rethink it? And now this blessing, the food which thy handmaid had brought unto thee, or brought unto you, let it even be given unto the young men that follow you. She was considerate of the young men. She wasn't just trying to give this to David. She wanted to let him know that she acknowledged what those young men had done for her and for Nabal and for the protection they'd been given, and that they were entitled to a reward. So she was the consummate diplomat. In all of the things and all of the things she said, the way she presented herself, she was very, very diplomatic. Verse 28, I pray thee, forgive my trespass, for the Eternal will certainly make my Lord, referring to David, a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Eternal. She knew that David fought on behalf of God, that he carried the banner of God, that he, whatever he did, was sanctioned by God. She'd talked to enough people. She knew his reputation. I pray thee, forgive my trespass, for the Eternal will certainly make you a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Eternal. And evil hath not been found in thee all thy days. Up till that, he had an unblemished record. As she was complimenting him on being just and being fair and not being arbitrary, don't, in a rash moment, don't let this go to your head. And don't, I mean, she didn't say it in these words, but that was the implication. You've had such a good record so far. Don't let some idiot like Nabal spoil spoil it. Don't let them incite you to do something that you shouldn't. Verse 30. And it shall come to pass, when the Eternal shall have done to my Lord David according to all the good that he hath spoken concerning thee. She knew that God was going to bless him. She knew that God blessed him right along. And shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel. So she recognized his leadership and ability and knew that it would just be a matter of time before this would happen. Verse 31. When that happens, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord either, that thou hast shed blood causeless. Because that would have been realistically what happened. God didn't send David out to do anything to Nabal. David was doing it on his own. There was no cause for doing it. And she said, you know, don't make that mistake. You've got an unblemished record. Keep it that way. You don't want this weighing on your conscience. You don't want it to blemish what you've done, which, as I said before, was to this point clean. Letting Nabal make you so mad, you took matters into your own hand and sought vengeance. You know, don't let this nobody get your goat or cause you to have this as part of your record. But when the Eternal shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thy handmaid. So here, at the very last thing that she did, after everything that she said to try to convince him not to make this error of judgment, and not to do something he'd regret, she put a plug in for herself. Very last thing, remember thy handmaid. Don't forget about me. Once again, the epitome of diplomacy. Verse 32, and David said to Abigail, blessed be the Eternal God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me. He recognized that what she was saying was true. He recognized that he had gone off half-cocked. He recognized that this wasn't something that God had instructed him to do. God had inspired this. This was one and only David, his inspiration. This was his way to get back at Nabal. And the only way he knew, he was a warrior. So he was going to deal with it that way. Blessed be the Eternal God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me, and blessed be thy advice, and you which has kept me this day from coming to shed blood and from avenging myself with my own hand. You know, we're told in Romans 12, verse 19, that vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. And it's very true. Anytime we get mad at someone, we get upset with someone, we think, boy, I'm going to repay them for what they said or what they did. You better put your hand or your head in a bucket of water and cool off, because that's not what God says. It's not up to you. You're going to take vengeance. You leave it in God's hands. Don't you do it, because if you do, you may bite off more than you can chew, and you may end up getting really burned yourself. Let God fight your battles. That's what we're told throughout the Bible, and every the evidence shows that when the Israelites let God fight their battles, they were successful. So she said, don't you do it, and he recognized that. Verse 34, for in very deed, as the Eternal God of Israel liveth, which hath kept me back from hurting thee, you know, except you had made haste to come to meet me, to give me this explanation, which you did, you didn't think about it and you didn't take time to consult, because if you had, then I would have been there and laid waste to everything, your household and Nabal and everything that he owned. But because you hastened to come and meet me, I've changed my mind, because surely if you hadn't done that, there wouldn't have been anything left of Nabal by morning. I would have obliterated everything of his, and Nabal and you and all of the shepherds and everyone else. Verse 35. So David received of her hand that which she had brought him, and said unto her, "Go up in peace to thine house. See, I have listened. You made me listen. You told me the story. You got my attention. You did it in a very diplomatic way. You didn't come out and start yelling at me and screaming. You're very polite. I've listened to you and have accepted your apology." Verse 36. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house. If David had come, he wouldn't have known what hit him, because he was so drunk. It says, like the feast of a king. He thought of himself as a king. He thought of himself as royalty above all those peons down below. And the young men that had visited him from David, well, they're nobodies, you know. I'm this great person. I own all this property. I have all these cattle and sheep and goats. And his heart was merry within him, and he was very drunken. Wherefore, she told him nothing, less or more. She decided, once again, showing her good understanding, knowing what he was like, what his reactions would be, what he would likely do, proving that she had wisdom, because in his drunken state, there's no telling what he might have done. So she waited until morning. Verse 37. But it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and he was probably suffering a pretty good-sized hangover, I would imagine, that his wife came in and told him these things, that what she had done, what she had done to save the family, to save him, to save his property, that his heart died within him when he heard that. The shock and perhaps the anger and the bitterness triggered a major stroke or something similar to that, because that was the effect it had on him. And it said he became as a stone. He was totally paralyzed. He was totally helpless. He couldn't do anything at all. Verse 38. And it came to pass about 10 days after that the Eternal smote Nabal. Now, it doesn't say how God did it, but it indicates that he was responsible. It doesn't say that he went in and pulled the tube out of the breathing machine, or that he, you know, put his hand over his face so he couldn't breathe. It just doesn't say. But it indicates that God was exacting vengeance. David left it up to God when Nabal intervened. Abigail intervened, and God did what he thought was right here. Verse 39. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Eternal that hath pleaded thy cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and hath kept his servant from evil. For the Eternal hath returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head." you know, the old saying, you reap what you sow, is very, very true. You do something that is evil. You do something that is bad. You commit a sin. You may think, oh, God will overlook this, or something hasn't, you know, lightning hasn't come out of heaven and struck me down. But you know the scripture, behold, your sin will find you out, and you will be repaid. I say, you may think you're getting away with something. God's looking. Maybe sometimes he's giving you a chance. Maybe he's patient with you, hoping that you'll change, that you'll go down a new path in your life, that you won't continue doing what you're doing. Anyway, after David heard that he died, he sent and communed with Abigail to take her to wife. He proposed to her because of her virtue, of her honesty, and also the extent she went to protect her family. That didn't go unnoticed by David. She did and said several things that, to the wrong person, could have resulted in her immediate death. She took a huge risk in approaching him the way she did. Verse 40, and when the servants of David were come to Abigail, to Carmel, they spake unto her, saying, David sent us unto thee to take thee to him to be what? His wife. And she arose and bowed herself on her face to the earth, and said, behold, let thy handmaid be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. She'd been given a proposal of marriage. And what was her reaction to that? She said, you know, just let me come. I want to serve in any way I can, and I'll even wash your servant's feet. That's how much humility she had. She was a very humble person in spite of the fact she was strong enough to go out and plead her case. She didn't just say David's feet, but the feet of his servants also. You know, it wasn't beneath her. She volunteered to do it because of her love and her respect to David, or for him. Verse 42, and Abigail hastened and arose and rode upon a donkey with five damsels of hers that went after her, and she went after the messengers of David and became his wife, and they lived happily ever after. If it were a fairy tale, that little clause would be added, but that is a story for another day. We'll end in verse 42 there. If you have the time and the interest, if you go back and read this chapter, there are a number of things that you can note about Abigail. Some of the characteristics, some of the things that she possessed and what she did that stand out. And I've listed a few of them. You don't have to write them down. You would come and you know, make your own list in your own words, and might have different ones. But she was a good listener. When this all transpired, she waited and listened to the entire story. She didn't have just hear a few words and then go off making some kind of a decision. She listened and then made a decision. But when she made the decision, she made haste to protect her family. She didn't hesitate at all. She gave more than was asked to calm David. You know, she had a regular banquet for all of the people. There was that much food there. She had common sense when dealing with her husband. She knew him so well, and was so patient, she knew the right time to approach him with what had transpired. She was knowledgeable, like I said. She knew about David. She knew about his reputation. She knew about his attributes. She knew about his destiny, that he was destined to be king of Israel. She took the rap for Nabal. She sacrificed herself to save her family. And I said before, including her no good husband, she put herself out there and said, "Hey, it was my fault. Don't hang it on Nabal. He's foolish, you know. That's just the way he is. He didn't know any better." And also, she wasn't timid, or she wasn't shy when necessary. She got out there and she did what she had to do. You know, I believe that every woman in this room today, not only mothers, although I would address this specifically to them, that because they're being recognized, but every woman in this room today, regardless of your status, would, I think, have done the same thing in similar circumstances. God has designed you, and you have this proclivity to protect your family. That's just an innate part of your nature. You will do anything to protect your children. That's just the way you are. Now, I'm not saying that in the 24-hour period approximately that we've described that you're going to do all of the things that Abigail did. You may think, well, I just cook, I make the beds, you know, clean the house, do the dishes, you know, work in the garden. A myriad of things, but they all add up to what you are as a woman, as a mother, and it all goes back to what you do to protect your family. Well, tomorrow is Mother's Day. We need to be grateful and thankful for our mothers and show them honor and respect, not only on Mother's Day, but on every day of their life as well.